The goal is to make it easier to use these systems, to make it easier to adopt these systems, to make it easier to manage these systems.
As a server business, we try to go for these five nines of reliability. And if we only offer three of them, people aren't pretty happy because then they're down for days, and that can cost them millions of dollars.
If we can't prove that we can achieve five nines of availability, then we don't ship.
The customers care about the bottom line, and we care about our customers, so getting that extra reliability is what it's all about.
The thing that I find really exciting about .NET is that I really believe it's going to fundamentally change the way businesses build and deploy their computer systems.
And they're not having to write those building blocks themselves. They're implementing the business logic. They're solving the core business problems instead of having to rewrite all this infrastructure over and over and over again.
Between web services, the power of C#, the power of the completely integrated suite of server products that Microsoft has to offer, will allow us to really have a huge impact on the way these systems are built, the way they're managed.
In the past, people have had rich client applications and perhaps client-server applications that have been locked up inside their corporate intranets. Now what they can do is they can expose all that functionality out to other people in the world, out to their customers, out to their partners, out to their suppliers.
Adio.net was from the very beginning designed for a disconnected world. Customers like to tell us a lot about the fact that they love the disconnected aspects, the data set, and the whole new application architecture.
I can take XML data from a trading partner, load it directly into a relational view. I can work with that data in my view, and I can save it back out as XML. This idea that you can think of your data as data or think of your data as XML, and the two are so highly interoperable, is just, it's really fundamental, and it really empowers some amazing scenarios.
Happy? Is there a happy?
I think happy should go with anything.
No, why?
I would eliminate Dopey from the Seven Doors.
Sneezy. He's on sanitary.
Can't be Doc. He's the connection, right?
Sneezy.
I'd get rid of Sneezy.
I'd kill the four I can't name.
Eliminate, meaning it not to be present in the scenario.
I cannot. I cannot.
I think I would eliminate Grumpy, you know, because, you know, he's always getting on people's nerves.
I mean, I love Grumpy because, you know, I'm always grumpy, too.
I think it would have to be Grumpy.
If I had to eliminate one, it would be Grumpy, for sure.
Dopey.
Probably Grumpy.
Most definitely Dopey.
But then we'd lose half of our team.
Yes, we would, in fact. Everybody know I love Seven Dwarfs. Kill Snow White.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back Robert Hess.
Welcome back from lunch. We've got a great day continuing planned for you. I'm seeing a lot of people filtering in now. We've got some seats up front and over on the far right side here, so make sure you kind of fill those suckers up so you can get to the front and see the screens really well. Now, as we saw earlier in the day, there seems to be a little bit of like personal choice going on between whether arrays should be one-based or zero-based. So I'd like to take a couple seconds and kind of poll the audience here with applause. Let me know, how many people think arrays should be one-based? How many people think they should be zero-based? And how many people think arrays should allow negative numbers? There you go. So we've got a busy day planned for us today. We've got some talks about .NET enterprise servers going on. And so without further ado, I'd like to introduce the resident Prince Charming of Microsoft, Paul Flesner, the Senior Vice President of .NET Enterprise Servers.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Well, first thing I want to do is absolutely thank all of you for attending. I know your schedules are very, very busy, and we very much appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come and visit us. We're going to talk about servers now for the next 75 minutes or so, and talk about the things we're doing, the .NET Enterprise servers, to make it easier for you to build great applications. Building apps is hard. I spent 13 years doing that before I came to Microsoft, building enterprise IT applications. It's a difficult task. Forget about keeping up with the technology, just keeping up with the business. reorgs, sales realignments, mergers, acquisitions, connecting to customers, connecting to partners, all that under the auspices of budget cuts is a very difficult thing. I saw an advertisement the other day. It said, two business people talking said, congratulations, they passed all the IT budgets at the board meeting, or all the IT projects at the board meeting, but they cut your budget. So it's the, kind of the world that you live in each and every day, and we know how difficult it is. And our job, believe it or not, is to make it easy for you. We do work very hard, and these conferences are very important for us to get your feedback and to learn the things that you think we're doing right and maybe the things that we're not doing so well. So we do certainly also want to listen. So with that, I want to get started. I've been in the enterprise business in computing for 20 years. And the enterprise customer is incredibly consistent. The abilities have to be assumed. Customers don't want to talk about the feature set of your products unless they know that you've got proven abilities. And that's been something that Microsoft has had to prove in the marketplace. I believe we've come a long way in the last 24 months, certainly. And I've got a lot of proof points in my talk. Hopefully, you won't think it's too many. But I thought it was important to take some time today to really talk to you and give you our side of this story on where we are on the abilities. We work certainly hard on scalability, but we know it's not just scalability. Availability, reliability, serviceability, manageability, predictability, and certainly security, even though it doesn't have the ability on it, are all very, very important parts of your business, and we want to make sure that we address that and help you understand all the things that we've done, the progress we've made. So hopefully you won't think those slides are too salesy, they're up front, and we'll get through them pretty quickly, but I think they're important. Agility, that's really what you want to talk about. I talk to a lot of customers every day, and customers are kind of tired of, Java, J2EE, Windows. They want to talk about what it is that you can do for me to help my business do better. How can I move more quickly as a developer to meet the demands of my customers? How can I, as a customer, get higher return on my investment? You know, after we get over the initial hurdle of talking about the abilities, they do quickly want to talk about agility, the ability to just move quickly in the marketplace, extend over the firewall, through the firewall when they need to, just to make a more agile enterprise. That's something that customers get very engaged in, and that's really what was the essence of how we hashed Microsoft.net. They also told us they wanted us to think globally, not just about the server, not just about the desktop, but all of the components that live in your world today. The device, client, whether it's a thin client, a rich client, a wireless device, the server, a rich, robust platform for deploying your applications, or a service that's a critical component of the economy today. You want to be able to latch in and leverage all of that infrastructure. So you wanted us to think very broadly. You also wanted to think about interoperability at the beginning of your designing your application. You really do need to extend through the firewall, both to customers and to partners and suppliers. Customers help increase revenue, and connecting closely and tightening the supply chain with your suppliers and your partners actually really helps reduce costs and make you more efficient. So those were the kind of the essence of the things that you really needed to do. Web services provides that environment. You've heard a lot about web services, and I'm going to work hard not to repeat the things that Eric and Bill said this morning. But this whole situation does put us in a situation where the best platform wins. Microsoft's excited about that. We have a lot of confidence in our engineering teams. We're happy to be able to just play on the playing field as long as everybody's playing in an equal situation. This picture, even though Bill put up one similar to it this morning, is the reality of your world. You could look at this picture and say, yeah, that's my world inside my firewall. Or part of that world is inside my firewall and part of it is on the other side of the firewall. It's a very complicated world. We know that. It has been in the past. It is today. It always will be. Any vendor that preaches a strategy of buy all of my stuff, application, technology, database, whatever, it's never going to be homogeneous, and it's kind of silly to think that. So we know this is the world you live in, and it's a world we're excited about being in. SQL, the language, did this to the database industry, right? That helped neutralize that so that we could all compete to have the best implementation of SQL. SMTP did that in the mail business. HTTP did that in connectivity. So those are the things that, from a customer's perspective, I think you'd get very excited about because it puts all of us, Microsoft and other competitors, in a playing field where we can create the best possible products for you and we can compete on your business on the best implementation of those various protocols or APIs. And that's an environment that we're extremely excited about, and that's the environment that I believe web services puts you in as a customer. So my job is servers. That's what I do. I enjoy it. I've worked hard at it. I've had the job for the Microsoft servers for about 18 months. you kind of get different opportunities to do things in a job like that. The first few months, you kind of get your arms around the job, and then you go deeper and start looking at the strategy and how we can make those servers work better together. Important part of understanding the platform and providing a world-class platform is the fact that you've got a lot of technology to provide a platform. To create a broad base for your applications, it takes a lot of technology. You can see on the screen now the products that Microsoft has brought to market to provide that kind of platform. You don't have to buy all Microsoft products, certainly at all, but these are the products that we offer for our platform so that you can build great applications for the Windows environment. Windows 2000, I'm just going to go through these very quickly to give you kind of a quick perspective. Windows 2000, the most deployed application environment in the world today. MediaMetrics says 62% of all secure applications are running on Windows 2000 today. Application Center, a new product shipped this last year to help you manage, scale out applications. We're going to do a demo of that product in a few minutes to help you really understand the power that that can bring to manageability and the cost effectiveness. ISA, Internet Security and Acceleration Server, an integrated and certified firewall and cache, both forward and reverse, very instrumental in providing a good, scalable, robust, and secure environment. Operations Manager, our data center management product that's in the market now, again, hoping to help you provide a much more cost-effective management solution. Content Management Server, the ability to build version and move forward, build very professional websites from a content management or from a content perspective. Host Integration Server, the ability to connect to legacy environments, a lot of SNA, MVS, AS400. SQL Server, we're very proud of SQL Server. We're going to talk about it a little bit more in a few moments. That's a very important business for us today with over 1 million servers deployed of SQL Server today. Mobile Information Server, the ability for you to build applications in our environment and extend them out to devices of all type with great wireless connectivity. Exchange, the most deployed mail solution inside the firewall today. 94 million seats sold and over 2 times as many seats installed as the closest competitor being Notes from IBM. And then out toward the front where you really have to connect up to your customers, your partners, and your employees, Commerce Server helping you reach through the firewall with your line of business applications and touch the customers directly with a good e-commerce solution. BizTalk Server, a very important product for us that allows you to integrate your business partners and really get out through the firewall or inside the firewall to help integrate your business processes, again, with your own systems or with the systems of your partners to tighten that supply chain. And then SharePoint Portal Server, the ability to really collaborate, build projects quickly, share documents, and work very tightly with the employees within your company. All of this focused with being better together in terms of the value proposition that they bring to you, the customer. And we are working very hard to earn your business to be the best platform for XML Web Services. So I'm going to do a little timeline. You'll see this slide pop up a couple of times. We are going to talk about the abilities. The slide says delivered. That's always a little strong because you're never quite done with the abilities. We're going to work hard every year to bring new abilities to the market to really improve the product. I think the thing I want you to understand in 2001 is that XML Web Services are real. Sure, we're in the early adopter stage, but there's lots and lots of customers doing it. Bill put up a big slide this morning, and you talked to some customers that are, and I've talked to several customers over the last day that are building their first web services and are quite excited. So they are real. You do have the tools to do it with the products today. I'm not going to read you the laundry list there, but it's important, I think, for all of you to be sitting there today going, yep, this is something that we really should be thinking about in our enterprise. And next year, we're going to make it easier. VisualStudio.net, I think, will be a huge benefit to developers in terms of building web services. And the Windows.net server, which we're going to talk about in a minute, again, helping you to really get those applications out there and providing the infrastructure to deploy them. The servers are going to pitch in, and we'll do our part in this time frame, too, integrating with Visual Studio and really making it easy, we hope, for you to build and deploy your applications. And in 2003, I think, is when this wave will really start to come. A lot of customers ask me, you know, should I be doing web services today? When should I start? And this is the kind of timeline that I think about. Maybe I'm a little bit more aggressive than you, and, you know, I'm not saying every application will be a web service by 2003. But I think if you think about the way web services can solve the problems that you've got in tying your enterprise line of business systems together, you'll get as excited about this as we are. So now I'm going to do some of those proof point slides. And again, I promise I won't take too long. But I think they're important. You as developers know that you learn something about your applications each and every time you test them to the very limit, right? Edge testing is an important case. And what you do with a benchmark like TPC, it's not that it represents your workload. It's the fact that it's a standardized workload that all competitors agree to, that it's well monitored, and that each and every result is audited. And when you drive your applications to 100% CPU and you're driving those disks absolutely as hard as they can be driven, you learn stuff about your code. We do benchmarks because each and every time we do one, we learn things about our engineering process, and we learn that we have to drive the hardware in different ways, and we also like to win. 2 years ago, we didn't have a TPCC number in the top 10. We've set that as a goal to absolutely win in this space, and first we chose scale out. It fit our model better. It fit what customers wanted to do, and today I'm very proud to say that Windows has the top 8 spots in terms of scale out TPCC. And SQL Server has 7 of those. So that's a big change in where we've been. In terms of scale up, you know, I'm showing this slide too. I'm happy to show it. We're not all the way there yet. We're sitting down there at number 9. Our first number to break into the top 10 was just a few months ago. But this is absolutely a target that we're going to go after. A lot of this is the fact that we're still a 32-bit system, a 32-bit operating system, and the applications that sit on, so we don't get as much addressable memory. And when you're doing SMP work, what you've got to do with fast processors is have lots of memory to keep them happy and well-fed. And this 64-bit architecture will allow us to do that. But we do pretty well in our own right in the 32-bit space, and I want to show you a little bit more about that. So TPC, while it may not represent your workload, we move on then to ISVs. These are the applications that you run in your businesses every day. And we worked hard on these as well. We really wanted, again, to stress our database and work tight, closely with the ISV, the vendors, to make sure that we were a good part of their application. And over the last 24 months, we've been able to win the top benchmarks in this list. This is a proud list for us because we've worked very hard. And you'll notice that check mark says best on any platform. So, you also kind of scan down, you'll see SAP here at the bottom, which is certainly a benchmark that everyone pays attention to, SAP being the market leader in the world today in the ERP space. And right now, or as of last week, I should say, we had the best number on Windows, but we had a big Unix number that was beating us. But I'm proud to say that as of late last week, we've broken that record as well with 24,000 in terms of, I believe it's dialogue steps, I'll have to look on the next slide. But we dug in a little bit deeper on this benchmark. And this is a slide that represents a big part of my life, so I can go at it in a lot of detail. But 4 years ago, we were kind of just starting out. I'd go out and we'd do a benchmark, and I'd go out and talk about being in the enterprise, and I'd get beat up a lot, and customers would laugh at me at times, and we'd kind of have that conversation that, look, this is something that we're deeply interested in, we're going to go at it hard, and we're going to make good progress over time. And you can look at the progress we have made over the last 4 years. It's also kind of interesting to look where we were just over a year ago, about 19 months ago, at 7,500. And the competition was sitting up there with 64-bit machines, with 64 processor machines. This was on an 8-way at the time. And where we've gone in just a little over a year to take the lead in this position, again, with a 32-bit system on 32 proc. Now, this workload is different than TPC, so we scale better in this workload, which is more of a real-world workload than we did in the TPCC. So we were able to do quite well in this real-world application. I guess it proves that when we put our mind to it and we work hard on it, we make a commitment to our customers, we're going to work hard and deliver for them. And this is, again, a very proud moment for me and the team that did all the engineering. But the real measure is customer proof points. I call it Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3 applications. Tier 2 and Tier 3 are important applications to your enterprise, but not the most important. Tier 1 apps, that's what Microsoft and the .NET Enterprise servers have to win with customers today. And I'm very proud to say that over the last 24 months, we're winning a lot of them. These are the applications where the business doesn't run at all. Okay, if you're a distribution system or a distribution company, this is the distribution system. Okay, if you're a manufacturing company, this is the manufacturing system. The one where if you go in and it's running on MVS, everybody in the shop knows the service level and can explain all of it to you. Okay, those are the apps that we had to start winning. And this is just a small list of the ones that we're winning today. Okay, Korea.com was an ASP in Korea, 5.5 million users up on Exchange. They did that in little less than 6 months. Jump down, we can look at SAP. Pennzoil. Not a drop of oil moves at Pennzoil without the SAP system being up. They did a big merger with Quaker State. were worried about the scalability that they might run into. We upgraded them to an 8-proc, and we upgraded them to SQL Server 2000, and today they're doing double what they were before the merger and still doing it at the same response time. So good stories all the way down. MyFamily.com, Ancestry, if you've ever had a chance to get out on that site, it's a lot of fun. 3.8 billion rows in a single table. UK Government Gateway, Bill talked about that this morning. Again, absolute mission critical. Verizon's done an unbelievable amount of work on our platform. This big customer service and billing system that they ported down from the mainframe has been a huge success for them, saved them a huge amount of money. And Dollar, that's a site that we've talked about a lot. They actually did build a web service to connect their Unix system with the Unix system of Southwest Airlines because they were trying to do a joint site, and they were able to put up a web services kind of intermediary to plug their application together. It increased Dollar's revenue by $10 million in a single year, and they got the app up and running about 6 months ahead of when they thought they were going to be able to. So this is the proof point that we'll continue to push hard on, and I know these are the proof points that you as a customer are looking for. So with that, I'm going to jump in, and those are the end of the proof points, and we'll talk more about product going forward. XML Web Services made easy. This is what you've seen a lot of talk about this morning with the tool set, and you can look down. The big push this year is the Windows.NET Server, which will ship in the 2002 timeframe with the .NET frameworks, which make it a lot easier for you to build applications. And then it's my job from the server side to wrap ourselves around that and make sure that our servers are easily extensible and utilize ASP.NET and the runtime and that sort of thing. Certainly, we're going to have work in 2002 and 2003, but let's take a look at some of the opportunities that we'll have in the 2002 timeframe. So the server, Windows.NET Server, there's a lot of focus on the abilities. We're going to talk about that in a second. I've got a slide on it. The primary focus was around security, certainly, and we're going to talk about that deeply as well. The whole thing, a big part of that release is focused on making web services much, much easier to build. Some of the things that we've done, Commerce Server. You can think of Commerce Server in a lot of ways based on the demo that you're going to see. Really a super framework, okay, to build e-commerce systems and let them extend out to your customers. And the ability to just take Commerce Server and be building your application inside the Visual Studio shell is something that we'll demo in a few minutes. Content Management Server, allowing you to take and build ASP.NET templates and use that for your site. SQL Server, ADO.NET, SQL XML, a notification service that we're going to ship this year. Lots and lots of things to make it easy for you to build web services. And just overall management. This is something that we get back over and over. It's one of the key abilities. It doesn't do you any good if you can do all this work and create great web services if the cost of ownership kills you. So BizTalk, a very important part of the feedback from the BizTalk customers is we've got the hub, but we're trying to get out and connect with lots of our partners, and getting them hooked up is very tricky and difficult. So we built this concept of a seed where if you want a trading partner, you point them to a URL, they click, you'll download the right schema, the right information, the right orchestration so they can plug in and you can begin trading. And application management packs through MOM. This is a very important thing, and these just ship for SQL Server and Exchange. This is all the IP that Microsoft's got from working with customers around those products. So these kind of support calls come in. We get these kind of complaints. These are the things that need to be monitored. A lot of that IP we turn around and put right back into these application management packs so that you can install them and you can set up the monitoring on your applications in a way that prevents you and lets you learn from all the things that we've had to deal with over the years in building the apps and deploying them for customers. So Windows.NET Server, better applications faster, lots of things in there, IIS. One of the big changes that we made, several big changes, IIS 6 is a big change in terms of the process architecture. We took the HTTP listener and moved it down into the kernel much faster, more resilient. We changed the process architecture, obviously the runtime. All of these things make IIS 6 a much, much more secure and faster environment. COM Plus, the ability to take your existing COM Plus objects, okay, and then turn them into XML web services through the dialogue or through an administration dialogue without any coding. Native UDDI support in the directory. So whether you want to publish that outside the firewall or just keep it inside so you can publish your own web services inside your firewall, UDDI built right in. MSMQ, the ability to get an XML protocol working within our messaging environment. And we saw the real-time communications example this morning. Lots of work in the ability space. I'm not going to list a bunch of that. 64-bit is the big one. SQL Server will come on with a version of 64-bit SQL Server at the same time or soon after Windows ships. Exchange will be the following year. Clustering enhancements to make it easier for you to set that up and make and do a better job with the clustering. A lot of feedback early on was, yes, sure, it works, but it's fragile and it's difficult to set up, and we've done a lot of work to make that much easier. And then integrating with partners and federation and that whole concept, which is so key to really being getting the full power of web services. Kerberos 5, standard implementation so that you can cooperate with other partners and make sure that you keep a very secure environment. Cross-force trust, giving you the ability of ease of management and higher levels of security, again, within a large company or outside to your DMZ. And then the passport network, which I think was also talked about this morning. So security is something I do want to spend a bit of time on. Security is a tough one. Some customers want a huge amount of security, very sophisticated, and are willing to spend the money and understand what that means. Some customers want no security. You know, they don't understand it. They don't need it. And most customers fall somewhere in the middle, where they want the absolute most security they need, but not anymore because it's a hassle to keep it up. So we work very hard to make it easy for you to administer, but it is a difficult thing to do. We're not making excuses, but we certainly have worked hard in this release to make it easier for you to try to administer this stuff. Now, there's lots of different ways to set up security, and if you ever do figure out all of them, don't tell anyone because they'll immediately make you the security administrator, and that's a very, very hard job. But it is important that, as a customer, you understand the pros and cons of each different security and that you think about it and you implement the right level of security for your application given your circumstance. The key things around security, authentication, authorization, and then actually securing the Windows environments. And there are a lot of features in this release. Multi-protocol transition. I'm just going to kind of run through these again more quickly. This is the ability to accept lots of different client or mid-tier connections into the back-end server, HTTP, Digest, or Basic, even Password or Passport, and connect it back to your back-end. And when you connect, we can transition and give you a Kerberos ticket, and you can lock all your back-end servers down with Kerberos and keep them very secure. Kerberos standard support, as I said, V5. Trusted subsystems, if you've written your own security, which some customers have, if you want to authenticate that and pass it on, you can designate a given subsystem as trusted to NT. And then you can actually map passports, PPUIDs, passport user IDs, in the AD so that if you come in with a passport ID, we can translate that into your inside the firewall AD user ID. Authorization, this is a very important point as well. A lot of sophisticated framework has been set up to allow you to take a lot of the authorization code out of your applications and set them up in a centralized policy environment so that you don't have to be monkeying with code if you want to change that stuff. It's very, very important and certainly very powerful. Seamless impersonation, that's a good one that really has been enabled by the multi-protocol transition and our support for Kerberos that will, I think, also allow you, again, a lot more flexibility as a developer and a lot less overhead. And then constrained delegation, where you can just not delegate broadly, but delegate to specific back-end servers based on the amount of control that you want to pass back. The other big change is just when you install Windows .NET Server, we've dramatically reduced the attack surface for people who would want to get in and do malicious things. You know, we don't install IIS by default. We don't install Complus. We don't install Search. A lot of these, you know, hackers were going after services that people didn't even realize were running on their server. And we've just eliminated the installation, so you'll purposely have to go in and add that if you want those services to run. Local and network services. The other thing is we'll start those services as network services, not local users, so they won't have the authority that they would have in the past. Code access security. This is very important. It allows you, as an IT manager, to set up and only allow certain code to run with certain privileges. So through the CLR, you can make a decision on whether or not and what kind of code you want to run. So you can say, my IT shop signed DLLs are the only ones that run on this server, and any server that's not signed can only read or only write to the scratch directory. And then software restricted policy is a lockdown of your server. It's kind of a binary situation where this is a lockdown server. If it doesn't have my signature, it doesn't run at all. So lots of improvements on a very necessary part of what we need to do to go forward. But it isn't just technology that's going to get us through this. We're going to have to work with all of you and with the end customer as well to be able to do this. The hackers, I mean, they are criminal acts. They're actually trying to disrupt your enterprise and cause harm and damage out on the internet. Excuse me. If the criminal was an easy thing to stop, we wouldn't have so many people in prison. And us just implementing a lot of technology isn't going to stop this. It might make it so unpleasant that we'd never be able to get any kind of authorization set up that made any sense. So there's a lot of things that we can do, excuse me, outside of the bits to make this better. Microsoft's doing a bunch of things. In this Security Windows initiative, all kinds of tools, testing process. We talked about the things we're doing in the platform itself. In this Secure Technology Protection Program, through the Windows Update facility, we can make it available to you to download all security patches first and give you special notifications so that you can do what you want with those, hopefully roll them out very quickly. Education, here this week, the author of this Writing Secure Code, I believe it's Mike Howard, is here this week, and there are sessions on what you can do and what kind of coding practices you should pursue in order to write great Windows applications that are very, very secure. If you're a VC7 developer, native code, there's a runtime option that you can set that'll allow you to disable a process if the buffer overflows so that you can stop any kind of runaway process. Lots of testing and logo certification. You can participate in the Windows notification logo certification programs. And certainly, always, 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 when you can, run non-admin. Reviews, sign-offs, good processes, good procedures, just more focus. I know the dev teams at Microsoft, I sit through security reviews now, something I never did in the past, where we really actually in detail go through what are our processes, what are our design points. We have people that do penetration and attack testing, where they go in and try to break things. All those things are things that you should take seriously as well as developers, too. And customers, just education. A lot of the NIMBA thing, and it was a very difficult one, that could have been avoided had we applied the patches. And there's, you know, believe me, we could have got those out, and all those things we're learning as we go. But there's a lot we can do to make this a much, much better environment for all of us. So last thing I want to talk about is an ASP.NET benchmark. The Nile web benchmark is a benchmark put together by DocuLabs and Ziff Davis. It's actually based on the TPCW benchmark. It's an e-commerce benchmark. So rather than do a competitive benchmark, which I know all of you don't always believe, you're always sitting there thinking in the background, geez, I wonder if they purposely made the other guy look bad. I decided we'll just do a benchmark that compares ASP.NET against our ASP environment. So the first thing I'll do is click and show you our numbers and the various ways that you can run in the current ASP environment on Windows 2000. So the first is ASP out of proc. That's a very secure way to run. There's a performance penalty you get for that extra security, but that's where we are on a 2, 4, and 8 proc environments today. In proc, a little faster, obviously better location, better memory. But applications, if you run multiple applications in the same process, if one misbehaves, it can take down the entire process and take down multiple applications. Okay? The fastest way is with the pedal to the metal, get in there and write ISAPI code using C, and again, you get very good performance out of that environment. Then we took the exact same configurations and we ran them in the new ASP.NET environment. Pretty dramatic results in the ASP out of proc, which is what a lot of customers want to run in. Again, much improved scalability up on the 8-way, and overall, just pretty dramatic results. You know, 4 times the throughput on the 2-proc, and you can kind of go through and look at the numbers. The really impressive was the M-proc, which has gone up a tremendous amount and is actually just a few pages per second faster than the ISAPI, with a huge productivity gain in terms of the code that you have to write and the amount of effort you have to put in to write that. So we were very proud. You'll see a lot. This benchmark thing can be a little crazy, but you'll see a lot of benchmarks. And always, always, always ask a lot of questions about benchmarks because you can learn a lot in the detail. And I always encourage our guys, when we do benchmarks, make sure you put all the code out there. Make sure the developers can download the thing and try it themselves so you really understand what we've done. And hopefully that'll help you with our technology or possibly even our competitors if we've shown you something that you didn't know. So now, I'm going to have Ori come out and talk to you about Application Center, talk to you a little bit about what it does, and also what we can do around web services to help us guarantee a better level of service. Ori?
Thanks, Paul. Hi, everyone. I want to take this opportunity to introduce you to some of the great management technologies we've been building around the .NET Enterprise servers and web services. Application Center 2000 is our deployment, management, and scale-out tool to power your next generation of web applications and web services. I want to show you how our powerful monitoring tools, deployment services, and scale-out facilities allow you to create a scalable, manageable, highly available environment for your applications. The first thing we're going to do is take a look at the simple VB.NET client, a typical type of application we expect great developers such as yourself to be building over the next few years. Giving a flight number, this client talks to a web service to obtain flight detail information, such as departure airport, gate, and time information. When I click the calculate fastest route button, our client talks to another web service and obtains driving directions, shortest distance from my office to SeaTac Airport, taking into account traffic conditions. Now, let's see how we can instrument that web service to perform things like server-level agreements and use Application Center to monitor and enforce those.
So that site just called out to two different web services to do the calculation to get you your fastest driving time.
Correct.
All right.
So this is our first web service, and what we're going to do is uncomment four lines of code that will fire a WMI event into the system, indicating the service delay it encountered when it called the flight status calculation component. So we're going to head and build that. Great. Next, we'll switch into the Application Center console, and we're going to define a new type of data collector. Our data collector is going to be a WMI event query. We're going to go ahead and wait for an event in the Continental namespace. Application Center will allow us to dynamically browse for the event, which should show up dynamically. There we go. And the two properties we're interested in. Next, we can define a custom action to take when we see this event and the SLA violation is detected. For this particular demo, I've chosen to send myself an email since this is my development workstation. But in production, an administrator can choose to run a script, add additional capacity, configure load balancing, send an SMS message to their cell phone, whatever they'd like. Finally, I'm going to paste in a custom message to our administrator that will tell them the SLA violation was detected. Okay, one quick thing we're going to do is we're going to add an additional threshold on this monitor. The reason for that is we don't want this event to fire every time we notice our code firing that instrumentation piece. We're going to tell it only if you see the service delay being greater than 50 milliseconds, does that constitute an SLA violation? Great. So we'll go back into our client. We'll type in flight 126. And very quickly, you'll notice Application Center will turn into a critical state, letting me know an SLA violation was detected, service delay of 78 milliseconds. We'll switch into our mailbox. Click send receive, and you'll notice we got an email telling us the SLA violation was detected, and we even have a hyperlink in here allowing us to automatically failover our client to use a backup web service that can meet our SLA requirements.
Now, the email's great for a demo, but we don't want to be sending email out to all of our network administrators.
Absolutely not. And let me show you how some of our automated responses can help you keep your web service running in production. Next thing we're going to do after we've added that piece of instrumentation is we need to deploy the new version of our application to our production system. Using the Application Center new deployment wizard, I can configure a custom deployment job that will send my application over to my production servers. I'm going to provide some credentials. And I'll be able to give it the machine I want to send my application to. Now, I have two web servers sitting in production. I'm only going to send it to one of them. Application Center is automatically going to notice the new version of my application and propagate it and all its associated resources to all the servers in my production environment. So once I select my web service and send it out, we're going to get my IIS site, my security settings for it, my ASP.NET pages, my private assemblies. We even have support for global assembly registration in the GAC. You can deploy Complus applications, registry entries, DSNs, anything and everything you want.
So you provision the whole machine for this app?
We have. And let me show you that working in production. So what we're going to do next is, great, we've sent our application into production. Now we need to verify that both it's working and it's performing up to our levels, and we haven't hurt performance using that new instrumentation. And there's my mouse. What I'm going to do is, using Application Center Test, our performance and stress and functional testing tool, we're going to record a session against our web service. Using the browser and the browser record feature, we're going to hit our cluster directly. We're going to enter in the flight information, flight 126, 10-2201 is the date, and we're going to click invoke. As you'll see, we got the XML representation of my flight details back, SeaTac Airport Gate B14, and served by server AC Demo 32. This is not the server I deployed my content to. This is the second server that the application was automatically propagated to. We're going to call this my cool stress test. One of the nice features of Application Center Test is I can now replay this capture greatly amplified against my production system. I'm going to play it at 25 simultaneous browser connections. We'll hit the play button. What you're seeing on the right in pink is the CPU utilization on AC Demo 32. Very quickly, it's going to start inching towards 100%. Application Center will dynamically notice that CPU overload. It will notice the SLA violation taking place and quickly bring another machine into the cluster, configure the application for load balancing, and come help serve that additional load.
This is different than what Eric showed. He was showing something over the net, a different service over the net. We're talking about in a given cluster behind the firewall that we're running.
Correct. Either your production web cluster or your business logic internal cluster. As you can see, my second machine have come up. We're now serving twice as many requests. I didn't have to deploy my application there or configure it. It's all done automated for me. And so what we've seen today is how Application Center can take advantage of rich instrumentation built using VisualStudio.NET and WMI, how you can take advantage of that instrumentation and take automated responses, how you can easily deploy your application and all its resources into staging and production, as well as how our scale-out features allow you to achieve a very highly available and scalable set of web services.
Excellent. Very impressive. Thanks, Jorge.
Thanks, Paul.
Now we're actually going to do another demo. I said before that Commerce Server 2000 has worked very closely with the Visual Studio.NET team to make sure that Commerce Server 2000, or 2002, excuse me, becomes a part of the ASP.NET family, and that you can easily and comfortably extend your Commerce Server applications from the comfortable VS IDE. So now LJ Germanario is going to come out and give us a demonstration of that integration. LJ? Hi.
Thanks, Paul. Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have one slide.
Today
we're going to talk about Commerce Server 2002. And I'm really excited to be here today because what we're going to do is give you a preview of some of the new functionality we're going to talk about in Commerce Server 2002. Commerce Server 2002 is actually a native complement to VisualStudio.NET. And we enable rapid application development and provide a developer portal, giving developers easy access to all of the essential Commerce Server tools they need right from the VisualStudio.NET IDE. For the developers in this demonstration, I'm actually going to show you how you can create a VB or C-sharp application right from Visual Studio. Then we're going to show you how we've enabled our sample application for .NET Passport and .NET My Services. So let's go ahead and jump into Visual Studio. Here we're looking at the VisualStudio.NET IDE. The first thing we're going to talk about is how you can easily create a new Commerce Server application right from Visual Studio. So just like you create a project, you can go File, New Project, and here we have a new section of projects called Commerce Projects. You have the option to either create a VB, ASP.NET application, or a C-sharp application. Now this would launch a wizard that would take about 2 minutes and walk through and create the essential resources. So your SQL data stores, your IIS resources, all of the XML and code actually required for the site. Let's fast forward and look at a site that we actually have up and running. Here we have all of the essential pages in our Visual Studio project environment. You can see we have all of the files and all of the resources there for us. Now, I mentioned before you can invoke all of the different tools right here in Visual Studio. If you were to go and actually look at project Commerce Server projects, you see here we can actually pull in the different Commerce Server tools available. So the MMC administration tool, the resources, business desk, profile designer, and the catalog designer. One of the other Commerce Server features many of you might be familiar with is the pipeline. So if we just go up to our project window and look at our default pipeline components that are installed, we can actually invoke the pipeline editor right here in Visual Studio by opening up one of these PCF files. So it really is an integrated environment for the developer. They can do everything in Visual Studio. Let's go ahead and actually take a look at the sample site. Now, what you're looking at is the iBuySpy site, which is probably familiar to most of you. The iBuySpy site was originally just a storefront application that provided basic catalog capabilities. Well, we've now upgraded iBuySpy. It's a fully functioning e-commerce site that uses Commerce Server 2002 for its commerce functionality and has integration with the .NET technologies for login and then for alerts. So we have the iBuySpy site here. You can see we have our different catalog, we have our account and our shopping cart capabilities. Let's go ahead and sign in. We've enabled .NET Passport login. So using my Hotmail account, I can log in, and it's able to identify me on the site. Now, from a developer's perspective, one of the things commonly used on a site is campaigns or advertisements. Because this is very tightly integrated with Visual Studio, it's very simple to invoke the content selection framework of Commerce Server right here on this page. So we're looking at our default page. If we jump back to Visual Studio, we can actually go down to our default .asp page, right-click and do a view code. And here you'll see that we've actually created this application using C#. So you're able to actually see the different calls we have going out for the profile, pulling in the profile ID. And then also, here we have a section that talks specifically about pulling in the Commerce Server 2002 content selection framework information. So I've written some C# code here, commented out. I'm just going to real quick uncomment this and go ahead and rebuild this solution. It rebuilds the application itself, takes about 10 seconds, and then once this gets done, we'll be able to go back to the iBuySpy site and see a dynamic advertisement now placed on our page. Now, all of this is integrated directly into Visual Studio, so all of these tools are available right from the IDE. We'll see here that the rebuild has been successful. We'll go back to our site. We'll do a refresh on this page. And now you'll see at the bottom, a banner advertisement actually appears soon. There it is. A banner advertisement actually appears, and that's delivered using the Commerce Server 2002 content selection framework. Let's continue now using some of our .NET technologies. Let's walk through. We see here we have an item called the persuasive pencil. One of the other features that customers commonly ask us for is the ability to maintain multiple currencies on our site. Here we see that the persuasive pencil is $1.99 US dollars. I can change my locale to Italy and see that it's 223 euros, or I could go ahead and change my locale to Japan, being able to see that it's now 245 yen. So the site is able to present different information and currency based on the locales. Let's go ahead and add our persuasive pencil to our shopping cart. You'll see that our checkout process has the normal checkout, final checkout, where you'd actually have to insert your shipping information as well as credit card information, but we've enabled this site for Passport Express purchase. You'll see here that my passport information is already propagated into the form for me. It has my default credit card information, billing address, and shipping address. So we'll continue through there, and we'll be presented with a basic invoice. I can verify my information, my shipping totals, my address, and so forth. Now, when I place this order, Passport is actually going out and authenticating my credit card information, and the site itself will generate the order and an order number. We've integrated this site with the .NET My Services. So once this order is completed, we have enabled it so that we get an instant message using .NET alerts. And here it is. Order number 1016 has been accepted, and we should watch our email for more information. So what I've shown you today in summary is that Commerce Server 2002 not only has great advancements for e-commerce, but also for the developer, having a developer environment right in Visual Studio and integrating with our .NET technologies. Now, I'm really happy to let everyone know everything we've seen here today you can actually start building with. In the show bags, you will have a copy of the Commerce Server 2002 Technical Preview Bits, and you'll also have a copy of the iBuySpy sample application. For more information or to play with this site, stop by the Commerce Server booth.
Excellent.
Great. Thanks.
Very good. Thanks, LJ. Those were a couple small samples of the work we've done, or will be doing and delivering in 2002 to help make it easier for you to build and deploy ASP.NET.
and web services applications. So now I want to talk a little bit about the future in 2003 and kind of beyond, and talk to you about the things that we're doing, again, to keep making it easier and to enable what we hope to be broad adoption for web services in the .NET initiative. Deep XML integration. A lot of XML work today already, certainly SQL Server, the ability to query and get result sets back in XML. BizTalk Server, XML deeply embedded into the product. A lot of additional data work and data adapters around XML sources. But we're going to continue to drive this stuff deeper and deeper into the product. Bill mentioned that this morning. Think higher level about SLA agreements, service level agreements, rather than managing tactically and responding to errors. And just overall, continuing to push harder and harder on what we believe are the key infrastructure enhancements that we need to make to get broad adoption of web services. As I said when I started out, a big part of my job is making our platform better together. I want each and every customer experience to be better the more Microsoft products, server products you buy in your environment. Again, they won't be built in any way that's proprietary that wires them together. You can always use other vendors' technology on Windows. It's just that my job is to make it a better experience with each of the various servers that you buy. So we really started to focus on the core set of things that we wanted to push in the 2003 timeframe. The common language runtime is something that we will embed deeply in all of our products. I think it's a very exciting technology that from an IT perspective, I know in my days in IT, I would have been really excited about this. In terms of the ability to let the IT infrastructure, messaging, transactions, database, all of that stuff stay the same as you evolve forward with technology, with innovation in the languages space, is something that I think would be very exciting. There always used to be, in my IT shop anyway, a little friction between the developer and the boys managing the data center. The data center guys wanted everything to be left alone, and the developers always wanted to use the most advanced productivity tools going forward. The Java world today is a little fragile around that. Java is tightly bound to J2EE. If you start to move into another environment, you're going to be moving and changing out a lot of technology. With the common language runtime and what I call language freedom, you'll have this ability to really keep up with language innovation. Java wasn't the first language innovation. It certainly won't be the last. We've introduced C#, and we're going to see, I think, a lot more language work as we continue to go forward. Process languages will be hot, things like Xlang and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of innovation that can go on in the language space while remaining constant in what you want to be your hardened data center. And I think that's a very exciting thing for customers. And we'll work hard to embed the common language runtime in our environment. And I'm going to talk a bit more about that when I talk about UConn, the UConn release of SQL Server. XML and SOAP, again, deeply embedded in our products so that we can exist and coexist in your complex heterogeneous environments. We'll continue to push that deep into all of the products. Caching. Caching is something that can give incredible performance boosts. It's 5,000 times more expensive to do an I/O than it is to go to memory. But today, the Edge server or the IIS server can't cache pages that have data on them that have come from the back-end database. A lot of you do this today with all kinds of tricks and optimistic concurrency and that sort of thing. But what if we were able to give you a notification system back in the database and you could register? Look, this data, I know it doesn't change very often. I don't change customer numbers. I don't change prices during the day. I want to cache that stuff all the way out on the Edge server because I'm not going to be changing it for a few hours. And if, in fact, it does change, send me a notification and I'll update my cache. That's work that we can do in our platform and will be available in the UConn timeframe. Diagnostics end-to-end. This is something that I worked in a complex IT environment many, many years ago, and we had, it's a common customer complaint. Geez, I hit enter or I hit the search button on my web browser, and it took 15 seconds to come back, and it always seems to happen at 2 o'clock, and I don't know why, but that's just the way it is. What do I do? Well, today, you have to go through a very difficult process of assembling a lot of experts and tearing apart a lot of code and a lot of different monitoring things on the network. What if it was as simple as saying, oh, look, we can trace this thing. It was three milliseconds on the client, 5 milliseconds on the wire, 10 milliseconds in the IIS server, 12 seconds sitting here in SQL Server. Then it's a matter of digging into SQL Server. I see last night they dropped a couple indices. Bang, we got a problem. They recreate them. Life can be much easier. So that kind of end-to-end monitoring, potentially even as a SOAP header kind of a thing where we can share that information with you as well, is something that we're working very hard on. Security. Again, a very complex world. We want to unify concepts. We know that causes frustration today. Multiple implementations of roles and all the products not using security in the same way. Part of our work has got to be to unify those things so it's not so difficult for you to implement and manage those environments. And then SLA, again, the work we've done with Application Center, the work we're going to do with MOM, I really think can put us in a different situation. And managing at the service level agreement is what customers want. And that stakes of that really go up when you really start to live in a web services world, especially if web services you're depending on for your applications happen to live outside of your environment. So there's lots and lots of work to do there. And all of these areas are areas that we're really honing in on and focusing on in the 2003 timeframe. SQL Server UConn, kind of a busy slide. I'd like you to kind of look over to the right side first, and we'll look at the kind of key components of the server. We're going to continue to push hard on analysis services. We get a lot of positive feedback from the customers. You like our OLAP technology. You want more. You want more data mining. You want more in terms of capability to publish great reports dynamically. So we're going to keep investing in that, and we're going to do all that we can to make it easy for you to develop those kinds of environments, develop your data warehouses, and again, integration in the Visual Studio shell to make that much easier. We will have a big change in terms of our administration interfaces during this time frame, moving from DMO to this SMO, AMO, SQL SQL Management Objects and Analytical Management Objects, and we're going to continue to really make those strongly available for your environment. My slides had a bit of a hiccup, but we'll go on. An HTTP stack, native HTTP connectivity into the SQL Server. So today we offer this, but it's through an IIS server. And what we'll be doing in the future is making sure that HTTP connectivity can also run natively on the server. That's not at all distracting, is it? I apologize for what appears to be technical difficulty. Clearly not running clustering in the back end on the PowerPoint machine. I think we're almost there. I can actually go on and do it from memory, but it's kind of confusing if the slide starts popping up. Another advance we're going to make in the UConn timeframe, we talked about pushing XML from kind of the mid-tier today. Today, our XML environment, SQL XML, runs on the mid-tier. You send XML to it, we convert that to SQL, and we go into the database. That isn't, you know, we can do better than that. And in the UConn timeframe, what we're going to do is take the XQuery processor and move it in underneath our parser, and we'll actually have an XML data type. So you'll be able to have a relational table definition. One of the columns in that table could be an XML data type. Inside that data type, you can have a full XML document with metadata, and you'll be able to do XQuery on that column as well. So again, making that much more native and much more available so that you can get XML directly out of the database or put it directly into the database through a native HTTP connection if you so desire. I also mentioned the common language runtime. We're going to embed that in the engine as well, so you'll be able to get language-independent stored procedures, which I believe is a very powerful environment for the SQL developer. T-SQL, yeah, thanks. We know there's a lot of T-SQL code, and we're not giving up on T-SQL. We're even, you know, looking at enhancing it somewhat in the next release. But we also want to give SQL a first-class developer environment, and that's the objective with embedding the common language runtime. I mentioned before this concept of being able to do notifications and invalidate some external cache or actually any other kind of process that you want to run in. The idea with this query notification manager is to allow you to register types of queries that if, in fact, any data changes that would affect that kind of a query, you would be able to then get a notification and take whatever action you'd like. Yeah, baby, we lost it again. It doesn't get any better than this. Okay. We're also going to continue to do a lot of work in the storage engine. XML is a native data to store in the engine, relational data, and we're going to continue to push on that for what I'll call a richer, more integrated storage experience going forward. And with that, we'll get away from that death slide, and we'll, which is actually very cool technology, I promise. And Jeff Ressler is going to come out and give us a demo of SQL Server and some storage futures. Jeff?
Thanks, Paul.
Hey, well, I hope the demo goes better than those slides, huh?
All right. So today I want to show three things about UConn in the context of a demo called WeBotics, which is a toy company that makes robotic toys. The three things we're going to show, Paul, are, first, how SQL Server UConn allows us to bring together all sorts of data, not just the structured data we're accustomed to storing in SQL Server, but also semi-structured and unstructured data, leveraging some of the XML support you just spoke about.
Okay.
We're also going to show the common language runtime executing a C# stored procedure, and I'll show you a new development environment called the SQL Server Workbench that's a replacement for the Query Analyzer, something built on Visual Studio that's a very productive environment. Up here. So this WeBotics toy company is having a wee bit of a problem in that one of their popular products called Steve Leap Year is not selling very well. I'm a quality assurance manager at this company and have just received an email from my boss, Paul Flessner, which I'll open up here. And I note that there's being a meeting called to discuss the problems we've had with the Steve Leap Year product and some sales declines we've seen. I'm going to go ahead and open up the meeting agenda and scroll through this. And what I see is that I see some Office XP smart tags showing up. And we've actually built a custom smart tag recognizer that's looking for certain keywords to appear in this document. And indeed, when I hover my mouse over quality assurance, you'll see that I get a smart tag popping up. I'm going to go ahead and click on the smart tag and select send all WeBotics tags to the smart tag analyzer. What this is actually doing, the code behind this smart tag recognizer is actually writing an XML-based query, sending it to SQL Server UConn, and delivering this result set back. This is a mixed result set. You can see that there's structured data in here, but also semi-structured data, and even things like email. This gives me a quick view of recent changes in the quality assurance around the WeBotics product lines. And one thing is of particular interest when I look at this display, and this is all being displayed in Internet Explorer as XML. I noticed that I've got an email message here about dissatisfied customers. So I'm going to click on that and take a look at that. And I note that there's a mention from an account rep out in the field of a decline in the sales of Steve Leap Year attributed to a company called Supergears. And so I'm going to go ahead. I get another smart tag. I'm going to click on my recognizer here and send this supplier name back to SQL Server UConn, again, as an XML query. And now my XML view here, is customized to display information specifically on that supplier. Now, in looking at this data in my graph here, I don't see any particularly obvious trends. And so I'm going to change some of the criteria to make this a little more specific to the problem we're investigating, the problem with Steve Leap Year. So I'll click on the criteria button, and I can go ahead and turn off Tiny Timbot and Robotic Robbie. And I'm going to go ahead and add to broaden the scope of the search, add appointments and events. I'll click OK and re-query. And now the graph looks quite a bit different. We're focused in on Steve Leap Year. You can see that something really bad is happening. We're seeing sales declining. We're seeing the defect reports growing. We really want to get a handle on this. So now at this point, as the QA manager, I can choose to send this off, send this page. Again, it's XML page. Send it off to my team and have them do some further analysis on this to really figure out what's going on here. But let's take a look at what's going on behind the scenes with SQL Server. Let's switch machines here. All right, there we go. So this is the SQL Server Workbench. This is a development tool that will eventually replace the SQL Query Analyzer product that many of you are familiar with, having developed for SQL Server. And I'm actually looking at stored procedure code. And
it doesn't look like any stored procedure I know.
It doesn't quite. There's semicolons and all sorts of curly braces and things. Not very common to find in a stored procedure. And that is indeed because, as you suspect, I'm sure, we're looking at C# code. Now, we've used the Visual Studio shell and extended it to work with SQL Server UConn in this case. So in this case, this is the body of our stored procedure. And you can see that I can navigate through members with the member navigation tool. And you can see that I've got SQL data types actually in my C# code. Let's take a look at the actual SQL code that calls this. And I want to show you a neat aspect of what we've got here with the SQL Workbench. You can see IntelliSense popping up, completing my statement for me. And as I continue to type, I also get a tooltip outlining what parameters this stored procedure takes. Instead of forcing you through the pain of watching me type all this, though, I'm just going to uncomment this line here. I'm going to click or hit F5. The workbench is saying, is it okay to connect to SQL Server and pull this data back? I'm going to say, okay. We'll connect to SQL Server, and we're pulling back an XML result set. This XML result set is the same XML result set that we displayed inside Internet Explorer, so that same view of data. As we scroll through it, we can see the different data types represented, including some of our messages that we were seeing in our web view. So what you see is that we've got the ability to display those different types of data in that singular view, yep. Messages, structured data, graphical data. We've got the ability to write these stored procedures in C#, and of course, any other language that works on top of the .NET Common Language Runtime. And T-SQL will still be supported. That's still going to be there, also operating inside this development environment with IntelliSense and things like that. And then finally, this great environment that does provide so many productivity enhancements for developers.
Excellent. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks.
So it was just another example of things that we are doing to make it much more productive for you, the developer, to build web services, and specifically XML web services, in our environment. So BizTalk, we're going to talk about that for a few moments, and we're going to see a demonstration. BizTalk is a product that we're extremely proud of. We believe there's a lot of innovation that's in the product, and we have had trouble getting the story fully out, and I want to spend just a couple of minutes talking about it. BizTalk can do a lot of things. It's primarily focused at enterprise application integration, but we also have some business process automation built in there, so people have a tendency to get confused about what the product is doing. Actually, it can do many things, and that's kind of the exciting part about the product. Lots and lots of customers today are using it for EAI, and it's great at that. If you really think about BizTalk, it does three things. It's this concept of a universal inbox, allowing us to accept messages in lots of different protocols and lots of different file formats and store those up and persist them into a canonical XML format in a reliable messaging engine. It then can also allow you to do data transformations against that information, which is also extremely powerful. Lots of customers want to normalize data or change, or if you've gone through any kind of merger or acquisition, maybe you want to flip the customer numbers behind the scenes or flip the catalog numbers or whatever. All those things can be done in a situation like this as well. And if I had to guess, most of the BizTalk customers today are doing those two things. What it can also do, and what we're getting a lot of rapid adoption on now, is orchestration. It's this concept of allowing you to orchestrate business processes. These can be very fine-grained business processes or very large-grained. They can be inside your firewall or outside your firewall. And this concept of orchestration is something that we're extremely excited about. You've seen probably demos of BizTalk Server where we use a graphical user interface to kind of define both the, you know, the domain expert sitting there working the kind of process flow that they want the application to perform, and then also binding that to various interfaces in the UI that we want to technically implement around. And that's very powerful, but we've gotten a lot of feedback that customers want to take it even further and want to be able to script that kind of information and do it in a development environment. And Scott Woodgate is now going to come out and give us a preview of a future version of BizTalk that implements a new and richer development environment. Scott?
Hi, Paul. Many customers today are already orchestrating web services with BizTalk Server. BizTalk Server 2002 enhances these solutions with management, monitoring, and deployment enhancements. But today, Paul, let's look further into the future,
okay,
past 2002. Orchestrating web services will be even easier with BizTalk Xlang S. Xlang S is the next generation of the Xlang business process orchestration language. Xlang S is built on the .NET framework. Xlang S gives you the choice. You can visually design a business process, or you can script a business process. So to demonstrate Xlang S, if we can just have the slides up, great. To demonstrate Xlang S, I'm going to play a developer, and my boss has just tasked me with creating...
Here, I got it. Calm down.
We got the forward and the reverse labeled differently here. Okay. If you can drive for me, that'd be great.
Okay.
My boss has just tasked me with creating a solution that accepts purchase orders from customers through a web service. Those orders are passed to my back-end ERP system. The order then gets a confirmation number back to the customer. The next step in the business process is sending it to the inventory system. And finally, the shipping system. At a later point, the customer can query their shipping date for their particular order. So I'm going to orchestrate this entire process with BizTalk XLang-S. So first, let's do that visually. How does it look visually?
Okay.
I create a business process that consists of actions. Actions are connected to ports. Of course, I send messages to those ports. And when I've completed the business process, I compile it today to XLang, of course, in the future, to XLang-S. But the beauty of this XLang-S technology is I can also script it. So what you'll see in a moment, if you just forward the slide for me, great, is that XLang-S is deeply integrated into VisualStudio.net. We get great, of course, debugging and other productivity support from that. So let's drop straight into VisualStudio.net and take a look at a business process project in VS.net.
Right here. Just want to click. Okay.
Okay. Okay, great. So here's the VisualStudio.net environment, and this is an XLang file in VS.net. Notice that we have the typical color highlighting, full IntelliSense on the syntax. Let's look at that syntax. Whereas previously I could just draw a port to an ERP system, now I've scripted that port to my ERP system. I've also declared messages. Here's the place order message that I send to my ERP system. Of course, a business process has a sequence of actions. Here is the start of that sequence. I can send messages to my ERP system and receive them from my ERP system. Here is this in XLang. Now notice on the right-hand side in the Project Explorer, I have web references to my ERP, inventory, and shipping web services. XLang-S is tightly integrated into web services. That ERP port you see on the screen is accessed directly in XLang-S. And what's more, I can create a web services front end to my business process. So what this means is when I compile the XLang-S business process to a managed .NET assembly, the customer is presented with a web services front end that looks no different to a typical VB or C# web service. So let's simulate a customer placing an order. When we fill in the web service and invoke it, XLang-S will take the message into my business and pass it to my back-end ERP system, simulated here. I'll approve the customer's order, order number 20, and the customer will receive a confirmation number for their web service. But the business process continues. I approve the inventory system, and finally, I approve the shipping system. The business process is complete. The final step is for the customer to come back and query what their shipping date is. So let's go in and query the shipping date. XLang-S will automatically return them the shipping date, the 26th of this month, for their order, order number 20. So Paul, what you see here is XLang-S. I've orchestrated 5 web services together to a single business process in one manageable file. All of this is built on the .NET framework. For those of you who want to learn more about XLang-S, your PDC CD has a prototype for you to play with. You can do all the things I did just now in VS.net, and check out Tony Andrews' session. So that's XLang-S.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, guy. So we do understand how important interop is for your business. XML web services obviously are an important part of that, but we want you to know that we know that all applications want to immediately go to XML web services, and there's all kinds of interop that'll be needed going forward regardless. We've just kind of put a laundry list of all the things that we're doing today. You know, these things are from SQL Server, they're from BizTalk Server, they're certainly from Host Integration Server, and we're going to continue to work hard to make sure that you can get and stay connected to all the heterogeneity in your world from the Windows platform. And again, of course, we believe that long-term, as XML Web Services become more prevalent, you'll be migrating in that direction. But again, there's a lot of interop between now and then, and we're certainly going to be continuing to commit to that. So in terms of the product roadmap, you've seen a couple of these slides this morning. You know, all the stuff in 2001 we're feeling great about, shipped, and getting good feedback in the market, and it does make XML Web Services real. 2002, again, I think we're really focusing on making XML Web Services easier, and we'll continue to work on that, and we'll continue to deeply embed them. It won't be a big year for SQL Server or Exchange, no major releases, but there will be important updates to both products. SQL Server, you've seen the SQL XML, which was announced today. Exchange has got lots of enhancements coming in terms of the abilities. We're going to continue to push on that, and also a very important update for OA in the SP2 timeframe. BizTalk, Commerce Server, Content Management Server, and ISA will all have releases, again, focused on the VisualStudio.net release to make sure that we get good integration there. And then AppCenter and MOM will be working even closer together to give you a more robust and complete solution for management in your data center. MIS and SharePoint also with releases in the 2002 timeframe. 2003 is a big year for us. Longhorn, more technology in the Windows environment, and we talked a little bit about that earlier this morning, Bill did. And then SQL Server and Exchange, a major release that year. Again, a lot of joint work with those teams to hopefully bring together, I believe, a very robust Exchange offering in that time frame, built on new storage technology, which we've talked about to our Exchange customers at MEC, and continue to do that around the world today. And again, all of the servers really syncing up and making a big, big push in the 2003 timeframe around XML Web Services. So to wrap it up, I think we've made it clear that we're going to continue to work hard on the abilities. That's something that I know you live and die on in your enterprises. Scale up and scale out are both important. We don't pick one. We have to support both, and because we know your business needs both. Major focus on TCO. Total cost of ownership is absolutely paramount in your business, not only in this economy, but in every economy. I mean, we won't give up. Quality. I believe quality can be a competitive advantage. We're going to continue to push hard. You've only just begun to see the advancements that we'll make in quality. It's something we invest in every day. And the agilities, which is really, I think, the most exciting thing that we've talked about today. We're going to work hard to make you as a developer more agile and to provide a better experience for your customers and a higher rate of return for your employer. Overall, we're in it to win, and we can't do that without your support. So again, I thank you for coming here today, and I thank you for the opportunity to present to you, and I thank you for your business. That's it for me. Have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next general session begins promptly at 2:45, which is 15 minutes.